Welcome to the Resilient Vet Podcast, Mind and Body Strategies for Success. Thank you for joining us. My name is Aaron Shaw. I am an occupational therapist, strength and conditioning specialist, and lover of health span and vet span, making sure that vets are healthy and active and have a long, vibrant career. And this is my co-host, Dr. Jennifer Edwards.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jennifer, and I am a 25-plus year veterinarian who now is so excited to bring value to you as a leadership mindset and energy coach. And we are here today to discuss yet another way we can bring more resilience to the practice of veterinary medicine. We all have body sensations, right? Throughout the day, we feel tired. We feel maybe a little fluttery in our belly or tightness in our chest if we're upset or nervous. Maybe fatigue and lethargy, like, oh, I'm so tired. I just can't keep going. And the list goes on, even some excitement. Like, what does that feel like in your body? So today we are going to talk about what do you do with those bodily sensations? How you can actually use them as a tool to increase your energy, to increase your experience of life versus sometimes having them detract. So let's get into it. When we are going through life, and particularly in veterinary medicine, we are so busy and it's hard to find time really to focus on ourselves. We are holistic beings, meaning we have our mind, we have our body, we have our spirit or energy, or however you like to think of that aspect of us as human beings. And very often what we will do is compartmentalize that. And I'll think, well, I'm working on my mind, you know, I'm intellectually stimulated, maybe I'll take a little rest and close my eyes for 10 minutes, but I don't have time to work out. Or I work out all the time, I go, but I don't ever just pause and be and connect in with my higher self. So it's so important to think and to realize that we are holistic beings. Every aspect of who we are is equally as important. When we are physically depleted, we do not function intellectually very well at all. Think about trying to write records when you're exhausted, when you're so tired. Or the opposite, when we are mentally not well, when we're stressed and overwhelmed and guilty, we get sick. We have a hard time healing from a surgery. I mean, think about high cortisol. We don't want to give a lot of prednisone to a dog before a surgery, right? Why? Inhibits healing. High cortisol levels endogenously built in our own body does the same thing. So we need to address all of it. And the most amazing thing is, you have all the tools you need right within you. So the first thing I want to talk about is perception and the power that is in the perception that we have of everything that we do in life, all of our experiences and interactions. How we interpret what's happening, we have a thought. Something happens, a person says something, we instantly have a thought. They're nice, they're not nice, that was mean, he's a jerk. Why do they do that? They don't appreciate me. Whatever the thought is generates a physical sensation in the body. It's a feeling. Why do we think we call them feelings? Emotions and feelings are closely tied together. They're not the exact same thing. Those feelings then are what lead to our behaviors and our outcomes, right? If we're feeling like somebody was being really mean, we might, you know, act in a way that's defensive. And the outcome will be maybe not such a great relationship. Sometimes in a moment, as the day is flying by, it's hard to really stop and identify what was my thought, what was my feeling. We don't operate that way. So your body is a wealth of information. Oftentimes the bodily sensation is all we feel, all we sense. We don't know what we're thinking. We don't know any of all of that. When we can bring a curiosity to our body, we say, wow, I've got fluttering in my belly. I wonder what's causing that. I wonder what I'm thinking. What's there for me right now? What is it trying to tell me? This ache in my neck, the pain in my hip, the cramp in my thigh, whatever it is, or the excitement, because I'm really excited about something, or you're just in a really good mood and you're feeling light and airy. What does that mean for you? And what is it all telling you? When we can start to learn in situations that aren't feeling very good, we can start to shift how we're viewing a situation. Maybe saying, instead of saying, oh, he's mean, he was a jerk, he doesn't care about me, saying, I wonder if he's under a lot of stress right now. When we shift how we view things to a little bit more of a positive state, we can start to decrease the stress in our bodies. We can start to decrease some of the negative effects it has on us and building resilience over time. Erin, I know you work with a lot of people, especially in veterinary medicine, who are under a lot of stress, and you see firsthand the impacts that this has on their bodies. I'm wondering if you could share some examples of what you've noticed.
Yeah, I think that it's, I just want to touch on this concept. You had a great point of curiosity, like being curious with feelings. I mean, I think that a busy vet practice is full of people who sometimes look overwhelmed just by looking at the people that are running around. Sometimes you can almost feel the stress like emanating from them, and it presents, you know, physically in this hurried state. And obviously I'm a human being, and I've been in the same way. You know, I've been in human clinics for many decades, and so I'm very familiar with the fluttering stomach and the heart palpitations and running around and kind of just feeling completely overwhelmed. And I think the concept that you're sharing is super interesting, because one, being curious, I think, is great, but by being curious, it almost gives permission to people, and I'm saying this reflecting on my own sensations that have been like that, that having butterflies in your stomach it's not a sign of weakness, or it's not a sign of not being good enough, or I screwed up or something. Like giving that sense of, I can pause for a minute, like, let me just sit on, like, what am I feeling right now? Like, maybe it's not a fault or a weakness of me to feel a little tense in the situation. I can actually choose how to define what this means.
Yes. And what happens is that when we bring that curiosity, what the curiosity is actually replacing is judgment. And again, I'm talking here now about some of the unpleasant things that we experience. You know, if we're excited and happy, like, great. I don't think that's something that people need assistance with. But what happens is we either judge what we're doing as bad or wrong, and a little critical voice in our head starts yammering at us saying, I can't believe you're reacting to them this way. I can't believe you're letting this overwhelm you. What's wrong with you? You're not cut out for this. On and on and on. You know, or we try to just get it to go away. So we don't like it. Oh my gosh, I'm anxious. I got to make it stop. Or I'm feeling depressed or imposter syndrome or insecure or angry or irritated. I got to make it go away. When we embrace these experiences, we're going to do the exact opposite. When we actually take a breath and we actually feel the sensation, the physical sensation of whatever that we're defining as that emotion, and pull it actually in, pull it energetically into self, and just breathe through it, we can actually start to experience and dissipate that energy. What we resist persists. And so when we try to just, you know, dig our heels in and make things go away, we usually are amplifying them. And what we also tend to do is we assign meaning to these sensations. So for example, if we feel a flutter in our belly because something happened, and then we say, oh, I'm anxious, or a tightness in the chest, we then often react to that fear of the anxiety. So now we're freaking out, like, oh no, oh no, oh no, I'm anxious, when we're not even now reacting to the original thing that had us feel the experience in the first place. Creating, again, more of that being open and curious to what is there can start to let go of some of these preconceived definitions and assignments of meaning that we have to these physical sensations that we are experiencing. Has there ever been a time, Aaron, that you can think of where you've been able to kind of go in with curiosity and benefit from, how do I say this? Benefit from saying, like, what is the sensation trying to tell me?
Yes. So from my clinical perspective, so I'm an occupational therapist, and I spent vast majority of my career specializing in trauma, upper extremity trauma, and having a client come in a very busy clinic, client come in who's had a really traumatic injury, which I'll spare the details of what those can look like, but you can imagine, power tools that are explosive injuries or something like that. And it's hard to not have a flutter in the stomach or my heart race a little bit when somebody's coming in and they're future function is in my hands. And so I can recognize that. I think there was a point in my career and when I would feel those things, I mean, I would define them as, this isn't good. Like, why am I, my armpits are starting to sweat. And nothing's even really happening, but my body's in like this fight or flight response in this moment. And in my mind, I would always define that as, this is bad. This is a bad, like, I'm losing my mind. Like, I got to get it together. And I think just hearing as we've talked through and listening to what you're talking about, in a sense, I could look at that exact same thing as, oh, my body's getting ready to focus on this case and be all in. And there was in hindsight, I can say I was kind of excited about it because I'm excited for this challenge. Like, it's a really, it's a challenge that I've worked very hard to have the skill set to address. But it's butterflies, to be clear. It's butterflies, it's muscle tension, it's heart palpitations, it's all of these very real physiological things. But I think that there was a point in my career where I would put all those in the, I'm not good enough, I'm not ready for this, I'm in over my head a little bit. And as time has, gone on, and I've realized that certainly as time goes on, maybe those sensations aren't quite as intense as they were. They're also not zero, but it's okay. And it's like, oh, I kind of know what's going on here. I'm going to, instead of saying I'm not, prepared for this, it's almost the opposite. Like, oh, my body is ready to take this on now proactively, as opposed to like, oh, I need to be cowering. Like, oh, my body's failing me right now. It's more like, oh, my body's saying it's go time. We're going to give you some adrenaline here to kind of focus and get through the situation.
And you hit such an important point that it's not about an expectation that these things will stop or go away, nor should they. They're not bad. They're not wrong. They're completely normal. And I used to react similar to what you described. I'd have those sensations and then all this meaning would come in, like, well, this must mean that I'm not good enough. I'm not confident enough, fill in the blank. What happens now, and I still have situations where I feel that I literally just sit in it. It's like as if the flutter, the tightness of the chest, the nervousness, whatever, was a little bowl. I just sit in it, and I allow myself to feel it. And I remind myself, there's nothing to be afraid of. Feelings cannot hurt you. Emotions are energy in motion. Emotions are meant to be as energy meant to be released. They're only released by experiencing them, and they cannot hurt you. So when we can just sit in it for a time, again, if you're sitting in something for 3 weeks, like, maybe it's time to get some help with that. But just in general, when we actually allow ourselves to feel what we're feeling, even when unpleasant, it doesn't mean we now like it. Trust me. We can start to let some of that dissipate. What also can happen is we start to get in this little bit of a spiral and we get a low energy, a low level of energy. So in my work, I look at different levels of energy that we all experience throughout the day. And when we're in the lower levels of energy, such as feeling like a victim, guilt, overwhelm, depression, those sorts of things, we trigger sensations in the body, and the body feels tired, achy, like, bleh, you know, that feeling. And so then we then assign meaning to the body. Yep, the body's confirming, I can't do this right now. So our mind is looking for agreement and the body is giving the mind agreement and we stay stuck. And that's why sometimes we feel stuck. So some, you know, what we can do is we can say, no, I'm not going to buy it. And in another episode, we talked about how just getting up and moving can increase energy. Sometimes I will drag my butt off the couch and start just moving. I don't feel like it. My mood is down. I feel like a lump, but I get up and I start moving. And oftentimes that's all that's needed to start to up level my energy. And I start to think more clearly and say, you know what, maybe I can do this. One tiny shift, even if you have to force it, can change that downward spiral into an upward spiral. It's very, very doable. Again, if you can't, then get help doing it with a coach, a therapist. There's many modalities out there. So Erin, I would love your thoughts on that. And then we are going to get into three practical strategies that people can start to implement into their lives now to start to help with their understanding of their bodies and using what's there in their body as a tool for life.
I think that feeling comfortable, maybe building some empowerment, that sometimes we do have to force action, force reflection when we are in a downward spiral, because it is really the path of least resistance. Sometimes it's just spiraling down. It's like you're giving up, and gravity and, you know, the forces that are around you, you're kind of along for the ride. So it does take effort to, you know, stop that spiral or slow down the spiral or to do something proactive. And that is maybe, and you can kind of clarify this, but to me, like, that with so many things in life, really, it's like that first step, that first action of saying, wait a second, like, let me slow the slide. Let me change something. Change is tough. Change of behavior is tough. And certainly our internal dialogue and everything, it's, you know, maybe even tougher, because it's like I'm going against my own internal dialogue here. So it's like, it's like a little, you know, two sides of my brain are in disagreement perhaps. So, but yeah, I think that the key here, and this is what I'm, you know, I want the drum roll of, for those of us that have been in these spirals sometimes, what are some things that we can do to change that?
Yes, I'll speak to that for sure. And just one last comment on what you said, you hit the nail on the head, because what's happening is there's an inertia, and the energy required to kind of get over inertia is greater than the energy needed to keep movement going. So think about the energy that it takes for a plane to take off versus the energy that's required to keep it in the air, or what it takes for the car to start moving. It's the same thing with us. And the problem is that the lower levels of energy, what we call like level one energy, which is a very like the depression, lethargy, not a whole lot of action. That's the how that energy is defined. So here you're sitting inside of experiencing energy that by definition doesn't have a whole lot of action, and you're trying to generate action. So it is very difficult. And it takes this conscious choice to say, I'm getting my butt. I used to joke how I would operate myself like I'm a puppet. Like, I am getting my butt off the couch. And I would literally pretend like somebody else was operating the robot of Jennifer and just start moving. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes that's what it takes to get yourself over that inertia. So thank you. So yes, three practical practices. Number one, identify and bring curiosity to what context, what story you're living inside of in a moment. As we go through our day, we are interpreting, we are thinking, we are perceiving, and we start to develop our story, right? You could have 10 people in a room, something happens, they all have 10 different descriptions of it, because we interpret. That's what we do as humans. That interpretation becomes our truth. It doesn't mean it's wrong, but it also doesn't mean it's right. It's not the truth. It's your truth. So pause 30 seconds and say, what is the story I'm telling myself right now? Are you in a spiral because you think the hospital manager doesn't like you and all day long you're just running around with this story of they don't like me in my head, or clients never appreciate me, or I'm never going to be good at surgery, or whatever? What story am I telling myself right now, and how's that working for you? Do you feel good? Do you feel confident? Do you feel energetic? Challenge yourself. Is it the truth? Tell you what, it's most likely not. What story would most benefit me right now? So when you're experiencing those physical sensations, when you're assigning meaning to them right now, what meaning, what story are you making up? If you made up the first one, make up a new one that's more empowering for you. And how do I physically feel when I think about this? Strategy number two, scan your body periodically for tension patterns. Again, it's those physical sensations that show up in our body. Your body is a wealth of information about you, about your mindset, about your emotions, how you're feeling, how grounded you are. Are you feeling really high up in your body, like up in your shoulders and your throat and your upper chest? Maybe you need more grounding, maybe some deep exhales, feeling your feet firmly planted into the earth. Just visualizing that can ground you. Do you have tension in your shoulders? Do you have pain in your hip and your lower back? Ask the question, what is my body telling me right now? Where can I pause? Where can I breathe into whatever unpleasant sensations are there? Erin, in your experience, where does this level of body awareness play a role in mitigating injuries, even in veterinary medicine?
Great question. I think that it's easy to get so lost in the work that we're doing and what's in front of us, the task at hand. And especially, with all due respect to veterinary medicine, the team tends to be very willing to forego any sort of personal safety sometimes and to just to keep working, keeping up with the patient care, sacrificing themselves. And so it's a very external focus, oftentimes at the expense of physical and emotional well-being of the provider. And so I think that taking the time to, as you said, like do a body scan, and something as simple and easier said than done, I understand this in practice, but to change your environment, change your position, move your body in a different way. If you're documenting for a long period of time, like sometimes, you know, standing up or just literally walking out of the room and walking back in is a nice way just to reset a little bit, versus we all can kind of get this tunnel vision. And I can, my personal experience that happens to me when I'm deep in work on my computer, I get tunnel vision. And as long as I don't smell smoke, I don't know what's going on around me. And I also don't know what I am actually feeling or doing, because I'm so intent. And we've probably all had this situation. I mean, I give lectures on body mechanics and ergonomics, and I have found myself more often than I would like to admit at my computer. And when I think about it, I'm like, wait a second. Oh my gosh, I haven't sat up straight in 20 minutes. Like, this is terrible. So I think that doing those scans are super important, and it does, I think it's a great opportunity just to reset. You're setting yourself up for the potential for success, versus when I'm crunched up into a ball at my desk, like I'm just like sinking. I'm in that downward spiral. So like, I think that little bit of reflection goes a long way.
Yeah, absolutely. Because when we do that body scan, as you're suggesting, it not only gives us information, which is what I mentioned earlier, but it gives us an opportunity to shift something physically in our body to enhance our posture, enhance how we feel, to get up and move, because we start to notice like, oh my gosh, I've been slumped here at my computer for 5 hours. Like, it's time to move, where we might not have even been aware a moment before.
Yep, 100%.
So strategy number three that can be implemented today in your veterinary hospital, regardless of your role, is to pair mental resets with physical anchors. And what I mean by that is mental reset means pause, And it doesn't have to be this long, drawn out, like, hold on, everybody, one moment, I've got to go meditate. Like, no, nobody even has to know you're doing this. Pause, take a deep inhale. And as you exhale, just feel your entire body relax and let go of tension. Just breathe it out. You can follow it then if you want to take it a step further with a word like calm or clear. And then just then walk in. You could do this every time you approach an exam room door. That could be what you do. You approach the door. Clear. And open the door and walk in. Hi, Mrs. Smith. How you doing? So there are other physical anchors. Every time you wash your hands, which if you're anything like me in a vet hospital, was many times a day, have the soap or the faucet be a trigger for your mind to say, oh, reset time. Every time I go to the sink, while I'm rubbing the soap on my hands, I take that exhale and I allow it to dissipate. It conditions a calm and centered energy in the body. And it actually, in the beginning, will be a little hard to remember, but it can become a routine and habit. Use post-it notes. Maybe engage your coworkers. And again, we'll talk about a culture of health in another episode. Engage your coworkers to do it with you so you can put post-it notes on the sinks or post-it note on the exam room doors, on the staff side of the exam room doors. If you wear a smartwatch, on the Apple Watch, there's a breathe app. There's other apps that can go, you know, alerts, alarms, reminders. There's so many things we could do on our phone or a watch, or it does not matter. Whatever it is that you need to remind yourself to do this multiple times a day, it will, like everything else, become habit and become automatic. So three strategies to implement today in your life. Identifying what story am I telling myself right now? Is that working? Do I need a new one? And noticing the physical effect of that story. Two, body scans, noticing tension, pain, discomfort, pulling it in, not pushing it away, breathing through it. And third is pairing mental resets with physical behaviors or physical objects in your practice so that they become automatic. Those three things I am telling you will be a game changer if you implement them. And Aaron and I would love to hear how it all goes for you.
Those are all very practical, very realistic. You don't have to have special membership or high-tech equipment, and they're all readily available. It'll take a little bit of practice to do, but I think that they are certainly within reach to help us build resilience. And that's why we're here. This is the Resilient Vet, Mind and Body Strategies for Success. Your homework is to go out and practice these three things. And definitely, Jennifer said, give us a report, what works best for you. And if you have any other tips or anything in your toolbox that you think would fall in line with this, let us know. We will share that with all of our listeners. So,
yes. And anything that you want to hear more about, just let us know. We are happy to speak to whatever it is that you need to help build your resilience in veterinary medicine.
Excellent. All right. Thanks for listening.